I don't have many complaints about Audacity, but I do prefer looking at waveforms. You get, like, the pretty multicolored ones, and Audacity is just blue waveforms.
It's just blue, but it's free, so, it's, you know, you get what you paid for, and what you paid for is blue.
Blue is the freest color.
Blue is the color of freedom.
I don't know, a couple months ago or something, a new video game came out
mm-hmm.
that you were very, very excited about. And I did nothing but mock you relentlessly about wanting this game. And it just occurred to me that I actually haven't asked any follow-up, like, if you've played it or not. So,
oh God, which one?
Skyrim for Switch.
Oh, I burned out hard on that one. It was just... I just felt saturated. I felt I had so much choice paralysis with it and just did not enjoy it very much. I'm just not a big Western RPG guy, apparently.
So how long did that process take?
I don't know, like 10 hours, maybe?
Wow, 10 hours.
Yeah, it was not very long. I don't have a lot of spare time. If I'm not grabbed by a game pretty quickly, I'm going to be out. So I did a run for maybe 5 hours where I tried to go magic only, and that sucked. And then I tried to be more of a archery thiefy build, which was more fun, but, like, I don't know, I would just get to a certain point where I'd be like, okay, I can do this thing, or I can do this thing, or I can go forge for a little bit, and it's just too much. I just want to have a direction. I want to have a quest, you know?
Well, Skyrim's entire structure is based around quest lines. Like, you talk to the guy and he gives you the quest and you go and do it, and you come back and get the next quest. I feel like 10 hours in Skyrim, like, I have people that I know who played that game, and they said, oh, I only played a little bit, like, I was done after 60 hours.
That was me with Final Fantasy XII. Final Fantasy XII was a game I played for 60 hours and never really liked that much. It just never clicked. Skyrim, I'm a little more, I think it's just because I'm older, I have less spare time, and I was playing it, and the whole time I was thinking, I got some other stuff I'd rather be playing right now, you know? And it was weird because I think a lot of the complaints you had about Breath of the Wild was inverted for me on Skyrim. Like, Breath of the Wild, where you thought it was shallow, I thought was accessible, if that makes sense. Like, I have only so much time and so much attention span, and it's game design of see something off in the distance, run to it, see what's there, clicked for me so much more than dialogue trees and skill trees and just trees of various sorts that aren't just go look at that tree over there and climb it.
So you're not anti-tree in general. It's just a certain kind of tree.
Yeah, I like my trees more basic. I like to be able to climb them, chop them down, maybe get fruit from them. But when I've got to, like, go through all the branches to figure out which part of the tree in particular I want for this particular quest, I get a little bored. So, and I it's one of those things where, like, I can recognize, like, objectively, quote unquote, I kind of hate that word, but I can recognize that Skyrim is a good game. It was just very much not for me right now.
Right. It's just funny because at the time, like, everybody was excited, like, oh, I finally get to play Skyrim, like, on the toilet. And it never made sense to me. Like, it's not a game that belongs on a portable platform. Everybody was really excited to get Skyrim on something portable. And, like, it's not a game you're going to play for 10 minutes on the bus here.
Well, but it's not a 10 minutes on the bus thing. It's in, you know, my baby is napping. I can play this for a half hour right now, you know?
And since you already have the Switch in the house, you'd rather take the half hour and go fight Lynels or something.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And Or fire up, you know, one of the numerous indie games I've played on it, like Blossom Tales, which was, I think I put 8 hours total into that game, and it was perfect. You know, I had some minor Zelda clone complaints, as you do, but it was still a pretty solid 7/8 out of 10, I would say.
So I guess the follow-up question is, I have no idea when we're going to get an announcement for Elder Scrolls 6. I hope sooner rather than later. Mm-hmm. But you can figure, like, 5 years from that point, they'll announce Elder Scrolls 6 for whatever, the new Nintendo platform, the Switch 2 or whatever. Are you going to be excited for that?
No, probably not. I've played enough Western RPGs that I've kind of learned my lesson. The pattern for Western RPGs tend to be depth over focus, and I would much rather play Final Fantasy 13 again than, you know, I like my pretty tubes.
I think there's something to that, because I've never had a JRPG break quite as spectacularly as I've seen some of the Western RPGs break. I take it you've never played the earlier Elder Scrolls game. You've never played Morrowind.
No, the only thing I've really played that's in the same vein is Fallout 3, which I did finish, but it broke spectacular for me a couple of times. My favorite instance of it breaking was I went into the ship town, the one that was like on the big aircraft carrier or whatever, and I did the thing where I dropped a save. I was about to go to bed. So I dropped a save and then did something stupid. I like went and just shot one of the shopkeepers just to see what would happen. And of course, the entire town aggroes on you and they killed me. And I was like, that was funny. And then it loaded my save, but they were still in the aggro state. And no matter how many times I reloaded that save, they were still in the aggro state. So I had to go back a save, which of course wasn't very far because you save like every 10 seconds in Fallout if you're smart.
Right.
But yeah, I was just like, okay, that was, how did that even happen? How did it alter my save? You know, like that's just weird.
This was on Xbox 360?
That was on PS3.
Okay, yeah, so same. So the generation before that, on the original Xbox, playing Elder Scrolls 3 Morrowind, and it didn't save cyclically. It had an autosave slot, but then you had your manual save slots, but the autosave would always go to the same slot. You have to go down into this cave, and you talk to this, the last living dwarf. He's like the last dwarf in the world, and he gives you a magic ring. You have to take this magic ring, blah, 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 something, something, plot token, finish the game. But as soon as I took the ring from him, the game triggered a glitch that I had seen over and over again where it just, it thought I was like 300 pounds over encumbered. So, and I'd seen this glitch many times and I'd like, okay, don't panic. All I have to do is pile all my stuff next to this dwarf, cast the spell to warp back to town, sell off everything I don't need, warp back, and then I can pick up the stuff that I actually need, and then it usually fixed the encumbrance problem. Here's what happened, was that little ring was the first thing I dropped. There's no physics engine in Morrowind. When you drop a bunch of items, it just makes like this bizarre stack of items. And the ring was on the bottom, but it slipped in between two of the floorboards into some geometry, so I could see it sitting on the ground under the floor. No. But I couldn't actually pick it back up.
So you're telling me they didn't have a physics engine, but they programmed in floorboards? It wasn't just ground with texture?
It was, okay, so this particular cave, it had like a ground texture, but then the dwarf, he was like sitting on this like wooden dais that you had to climb up some stairs. So you kind of had this like wooden platform and then the cave floor beneath it, and the ring somehow, I guess the individual floorboards were rendered and the ring fell in between them.
I don't think I've ever had a game where you could literally lose something between the floorboards. That's pretty amazing.
And of course, I didn't realize this until I left the cave, and I like an hour down the road, I'm like, oh, I didn't get that ring. I guess it's still laying there. And that's when I discovered. So I had to look it up online, and there's a like a backdoor way to finish the game that involves killing God. And God has unarmed attacks. It's all he can. He just punches you to death. But each of his punches drain your entire stamina bar. And the only way I could avoid it was to enchant myself with, like, permanent flight and fly up to the top of the room so I'm out of the range of his punches, and the fight took, like, an hour.
Oh, speaking of, like, you're reminding me because, like, that was the thing. Everyone kept complaining about the stamina system in Breath of the Wild, and I'm like, I can kind of see why it's a bummer to not be able to run, but the stamina in frickin' Skyrim just kept, like, I'd be swinging my, I never ran out of stamina just swinging my sword in Zelda. That's all I'm saying. Like, that pissed me off so much, constantly.
That wasn't one of my complaints about Breath of the Wild. I thought the stamina system did pretty good overall.
Well, you never played Skyward Sword at all, right? Skyward Sword was sort of like the prototype stamina system, and it was similarly implemented, except instead of it being something where you just lived with it and basically a lot of what the puzzles were where they would have these little pieces of fruit in the environment you'd be like on a fence and you'd be climbing and then you'd have to find this piece of fruit so you could keep climbing. They do those kind of puzzles and it was okay, but you could definitely see there was a lot about Skyward Sword that kind of was the prototype for Breath of the Wild. There was crafting, but it was much more limited. It's a game that I think we don't get Breath of the Wild without Skyward Sword, but I don't know how well it would hold up going back to it now. I'm actually really curious to go back and try it again, because I didn't hate Skyward Sword. I didn't love it, but I didn't hate it like a lot of people did.
What is it with Nintendo and fruit? I feel like fruit is the focal point of a lot of Nintendo games.
Well, I think that a lot of Nintendo games are just about whimsy, and that's just a very kind of whimsical way of doing things. I mean, go all the way back to Pac-Man. I mean, Pac-Man was about eating fruit, primarily. I mean, you had pellets and whatever, but your bonuses were fruit, and then eventually pretzels and...
car keys, and it ended up at car keys, I think.
It got kind of esoteric, yeah.
What's a list of things that we can eat? Car keys. Done with Skyrim, then. Skyrim for Switch. Turned out to not be a good toilet game.
It wasn't a match, but you know, that happens sometimes. I found a bunch of other games I would rather be playing at the time, and I put it back on the shelf. It's something I may, maybe one day when I don't have a kid and I have more patience, I'll always have a kid. God, that was a weird way of facing it. When I don't have a toddler. just edit that part out.
Like, we'll just give the kid away.
When I don't have a toddler, I should say.
When the bog witch comes around with her gunny sack.
When our family name comes out of the hat, then, you know, the lottery jokes.
I remember reading that short story, but my first exposure to it was like a mini series in like the 90s. I feel like it was on ABC or something. Had like the lottery mini series, and it was structured... like, they didn't just film the short story. It was structured like a sequel to the short story.
Mm-hmm.
Like, somebody, like a kid, like, escaping the town and then visiting again 30 years later or something. It was very strange.
Well, I mean, the lottery is kind of a not to get all lit nerd on you, but I mean, it's kind of become an archetype. I mean, you've got things like the Hunger Games that kind of take that same sort of formula of, you know, choosing representatives to, you know, keep the peace allegedly. Handmaid's Tale's got a little bit of it, but there's not really so much names out of the hat. Anywho, I digress. It's a good short story. If you don't know the twist going into it, which I guess we just spoiled it there for everyone.
I guess.
But if you don't know the twist going into it, it's kind of powerful.
Yeah, the short story was... I mean, I knew the twist going into it because I had seen this miniseries, but I feel like watching this like miniseries back in the day, like the twist wasn't hidden?
It might not have been. They might have been structuring it differently. But do you know if it was called The Lottery?
I feel like it was, but I don't know, man. We're going 95, 96 or so, if I had to guess.
So I picked up immediately The Lottery TV movie 1996, and there apparently was a 2014 one as well.
I mean, I'd watch it. I'd like to see more, like a new adaptation of the story.
Who's in this? Kerry Russell was in it. Who is she? She was one of those chicks from the WB, wasn't she?
I don't know. She she was in The Lottery in 1996. That's her IMDb summary right there.
Felicity. She was Felicity. I never watched Felicity.
You know what? I can bring her to mind now. Yes, that was her. I can bring her to mind when you said Felicity. Uh-huh.
Let's move on, because I wanted to talk to you. I actually had something very specific I wanted to talk to you about, because you actually wrote a blog post about it, is the four job fiesta, because I think I might try it for the first time this year.
Okay, I'm excited for you to try it. I'm excited to be your mentor.
Final Fantasy V is a game I've never finished. It's, again, choice paralysis. I'm bad with choices. I like being funneled. I don't know what that this probably says something about me on a deeply psychological level. But yeah, I got all the jobs. I got all the way to the third world. And then I started hitting some challenges where I was like, I have like halfway leveled up all of these jobs, but I have no idea how I'm supposed to be blank boss now, you know?
Now that's, I definitely sympathize with that, because that was my first experience with Final Fantasy V. Back before it ever got released in North America, this would have been around the time Final Fantasy VIII was new, was when emulators were good enough, and some ROM hacking community had just done a translation of Final Fantasy V, and I didn't like it the first time I played it. For the exact same reason. I felt like all these jobs were just bad, and all of these bosses were just killing me, and there was nothing I could really do about it, and I had all these better games on the shelf.
Yeah, I played a little bit of it on emulator, but I didn't really sink my teeth into it until the GBA, because I was playing everything on the GBA. I've always been a big fan of portable consoles, but I don't even know how many hours into it. I mean, it's not a terribly long game, but it's probably, what, 15, 20 hours to get to the third continent your first time around?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
A third world, it's not a continent. And, yeah, I mean, I think, actually, I got all the way to where the rift opens up, I believe.
Well, that's very early in the third world. Like, you still had most of the third world to go.
Okay, I couldn't remember exactly how it was structured. So, but you've been saying for years that if you don't like Final Fantasy V or even have never played it, that Fiesta can be a good way to kind of wrap your brain around it because it takes away a lot of the options.
I do always try to put the little asterisk at that statement because just due to the random nature of the Fiesta, it's entirely possible, like, your first job role is going to be thief, and then your second job role is going to be, like, time mage, and then you're going to have a really hard first world if that's the case. But in general, yes, I would stand by that statement.
So without playing the actual Fiesta, I've been thinking about doing a one job per crystal challenge, a self-imposed one, where maybe I just say, okay, I'm going to play Red Mage from the first crystal, like, without doing the dice roll factor of it, just to even make it even easier than using the simplest Fiesta rule. But I kind of just want to do the Fiesta now, because everyone else will be playing it, and I can throw it on a stream, and people can watch me struggle. I might not get past the first crystal, but it might be fun for a night.
Well, first of all, I hate to burst your bubble, but Red Mage is the second crystal. You can't get Red Mage at the first crystal.
There you go. I already screwed up.
It's already over. That's enough of that.
Okay, then what? Fighter from the first crystal is probably the easiest go?
I would say Black Mage, honestly. I would go with Black Mage from the first crystal.
You think four Black Mages, you just get enough MP that you can tear through it?
Four Black Mages, you will steamroll the first world. Nothing will stand in your way. There's a couple classes in Final Fantasy V that are really good, but you have to work really hard to make them good.
See, and it's weird, too, because I played all of Final Fantasy III, the DS version. I don't think I've ever tried the Famicom, or if I have, it was only briefly on an emulator years ago. I finished Final Fantasy III, but it's structured so differently because you really, like, I took a thief for the entire game. He was hitting all nines because he gets such crazy speed in that game. And so then you're just dropping, 10,000 damage on everything for the entire game. It's not a game that you mix and match a lot. It's a game that you kind of commit yourself to a build.
Not going to get that out of a thief in five, unfortunately. No.
Is thief the most inconsistent class in Final Fantasy?
You mean like across all the games?
Yeah, because like Black Mage is usually consistently pretty good. They're squishier in some games than others, but usually they're pretty much always just glass cannons. They just wreck house. But like thief, like you've got games where your thief is your main character, your main damage dealer, like 9 and to a degree 6 with lock. But then you have games like 5 where they just nerf the heck out of it.
So the thief in Final Fantasy V, it's not that he's weak, it's that he's a utility character. Thieves give you the ability to sprint, they show you secret passages, you cannot get back attacked when you have a thief in your party, you get a free fleeing ability, and then you get the ability to steal items and things. Like, they're there to support the party as a whole. I guess it's because Final Fantasy V, they have so many other just really good, just fighter classes. They didn't need the thief to fill that role.
I guess you're right, because when you look at something like 6 and 9, you got the thief is less of a class and more of just a personality trait almost. It's like who the people are, but the guys are almost like ciphers half the time.
I do feel like each individual thief going forward, though, like they give them something a little unique, which is cool. Like Locke gets some kind of unique equipment that only he can use. And then, Zidane gets his whole like ability lists. Then Riku gets that ability to like kill machines by poking them.
I love that one.
Here's my official, like, first-time Fiesta advice.
Mm-hmm.
Roll your win job and just keep it, whatever it is, even if it's thief. When you get to the water job, though, if you roll Berserker, get rid of it.
Okay, so how did I thought that? How does Berserker risk work? Because I thought that if I was, I thought that I could choose to not have an option for Berserker.
Berserker is always in your pool because the water crystals are always part of the roll. Berserker is the worst job in the game by a very large margin. Like, the second worst job in the game, you'd have to stack 12 Berserkers one on top of the other to reach it. And when I say it's bad, I don't want you to get the sense of, like, oh, he means, like, it's bad. Like Strago is bad in 6. He's just a character with bad options. No, I mean, it is literally better to have a dead party member than a Berserker in many of the fights.
Well, I've seen, because there's enemies that have, like, counters and stuff, and your Berserker is stupid and will just keep hitting it.
Mm-hmm. And because they're so bad, they put Berserker Risk up as, like, their donation incentive. So every $10 they get for the charity, they put another Berserker in the Berserker Risk pool. So everybody who rolls Berserker Risk, every time you roll a job, no matter what rule set you're using, you might get one of those Berserkers.
But if you play at all, you can get a Berserker for your Water Crystal job.
Correct. Berserker is one of the jobs that unlocks in the Water Crystal. But they'll have the job fare up. So for like $3 or $4 or whatever, you can just buy another class. So if you roll Thief, and then your second job rolls Berserker, my advice is buy any of the, like, Mage jobs. Black Mage, Time Mage, Summoner, or Blue Mage. One of those four. That'll give you access to elemental attacks all through the first world. Early on, if you roll something like Knights, Blue Mage, Monk, something that can kind of carry themselves, you might just consider taking the Berserker if you get it. It is kind of fun, a little bit, in some areas of the game. But that's my official advice, and then I would just take whatever fire or earth jobs it gives you. Don't do the Thief Berserker, man, don't do it.
I have issues with Blue Mages, but I think if I was forced to take one, I would put in the work to learn how to use it, because normally Blue Mage is something I just ignore completely, because who needs to go hunt down a bunch of abilities from monsters that you have to, like, charm to get them to put them on you?
The very first thing you do in Final Fantasy V is go through a little blue pirate cave.
Mm-hmm.
And there are bats in there, and they teach you a spell called Vampire that is probably the best blue magic spell in the game.
Nice. It's essentially drain, right? Like, yeah, you just suck up some HPs.
Blue Mages, they have a pretty good equipment set. They can use rods, which means they can break rods, which is excellent in Final Fantasy V. If Vampire is the only spell you give a Blue Mage, pretty good class. That character is still better than probably a third of the classes in the game.
So that's the equivalent of, like, my Gal with Cat Scratch strategy, because Gal is another one. I get him Cat Scratch and then I never look back.
Yeah, just real nice and easy. Nice and easy.
Who needs to memorize a chart? Like, I would like Gal so much more if, instead of having, like, a list of enemies that, like, who the hell knows what they do, why not just say, you have this monster ability now, you know? Like, sort of like what they do with... I feel like that's kind of what they did with the 7. I mean, that's really more like blue magic, but they just call them monster abilities. And, like, that makes more sense to me.
Well, you can always tell what's a monster ability in Final Fantasy VI because it has a unique casting animation, the little spinny triangle. Those are all monster abilities.
Yeah, that's true. I do like the spinny triangle.
I have a problem, though, that maybe you can help me with.
Okay.
And it's very pertinent to what we're doing here tonight. And I'm bad at naming things. Terrible at naming things. To the point where my YouTube channel is called Brick Road's Ridiculous Nonsense. That's what I settled on after months of deliberation. So, like, we have to call this podcast something. We just can't call it that podcast we did.
I'm actually not opposed to that podcast we did. I mean, not to burst your bubble, but I'm pretty sure my YouTube channel is just called McLean's Random Crap at this point. So
it is. It is.
Because much like you, I just put in something into the naming field and didn't think about it again.
Like, is that what we're going with? Just that podcast we did?
No matter what we do, at least at first, this is probably going to be a companion podcast to your YouTube/stream stuff, since you're the one with the audience that's going to be coming in. I don't have an audience. I've got, like, 3 guys I stole from you.
Give them back. I want them.
So I was trying to think of something like, oh, I had some ideas and they all flew out of my head because, of course, I didn't have a pen on me when I thought of them. But like, you know, just like a Brick Road side piece or I don't know. That's terrible. Now,
that sounds like I'm carrying a firearm.
Sure, let's go with that.
It's a little unfair, though, because like almost every podcast that I'm familiar with, and I'm not a big podcast listener at the best of times, but like no podcast really knows what they're about until a couple episodes in anyway.
I've listened to several podcasts that what they'll do is they'll actually record like the first half dozen and then somewhere in that process come up with a name. So when you actually listen to the podcast, they say, this podcast we're going to name at some point. And then when you're downloading it, you're like, oh, they eventually decide to call it this thing over here. And I think part of my problem is I listen to too many podcasts. So I'm just thinking of like 18 different names that I've already heard and like, oh no, what was I going to...
Should we take them all 18 and put them in a blender and spin them around and see what syllables it spits out?
Oh my God. Can we use randomnamegenerator.com?
Oh, you know what? I bet...
Can they be the... Do they have a podcast name generator?
I don't know. I hope so. I'm going there right now. Prayer generator. A haiku generator.
We could be a haiku.
That would get very exhausting.
Oh, okay. So it's under web series name generator. 10 random names for the one web series.
Oh, I have a good one. Eccentric nonsense.
I mean, that sounds like a companion podcast to your ridiculous nonsense.
And I have immediately under it, like right under it in the list. Like it can't be our podcast name, but I'm thinking mascot can be the Wonder Cat.
Yes. I'm all about that. Let's see. Now, I like that. Write those down, but I'm going to go through some of the ones I've got. We've got dating drama, not really our genre. If we were doing like a serial type thing, we've got Dangerous Season.
Well, we are both podcasting in a thunderstorm right now, so a little bit dangerous.
The Dangerous Weathercast. And then if we decide to be edgelords, we have the Ironic Blade cast.
I feel like no edgelord wields his blade ironically. I feel like every edgelord is wielding that blade incredibly sincerely.
The unironic blade?
I have one called Gloom Days. I mean, is that something we need to take into consideration? Because if when October gets here, the trendy thing to do is to change your name to something vaguely Halloween-y.
A lot of these are very spooky. I'm seeing Venom. It's Venom Shift. I actually read it as Venom Shaft, which is a very different thing. Bitten Chronicles, if we want to go vampire for a week.
How about Girl Reaction?
Yeah, two dudes in a series called Girl Reaction. Might get us on Tumblr.
Yeah, we'd have the Fine Brothers on our ass.
Teens react to girl, whatever you said.
To girl reaction.
I like this one too, actually. This one's just called Lazy Myths.
Lazy Myths? I kind of feel like that's an oxymoron, because like a myth kind of, like a creation story, like kind of by definition isn't lazy.
But that's why I like the dichotomy of it. You know, you have lazy myth. It's like, I don't know, one time God made stuff, the end.
You know, I take that back. I have heard some lazy myths like, Bob, where does rain come from? It's like, oh, you know, Jesus is crying.
Why is Jesus crying?
Probably something you did. Go back to bed.
One of the notes I wrote down was Mega Man Legacy Collection, because one of my plans for this week was to buy Mega Man Legacy Collection for Switch. But then my freaking Switch, the dock that hooks up to the TV, died. And that's really upsetting. I've never had a Nintendo console just straight up die on me like that before.
I have two NESs in the house that still work.
So do I. Yeah, Michelle and I both have, like, working NESs that we both brought into the relationship, and I have one. I have a CRT television I got off a friend for free, specifically just so I could play NES in, like, its original form. Which, let me tell you, the dudes moving us, when they saw that I had a 120-pound CRT television, I think they wanted to quit.
Do you feel like those old retro consoles, you have to play them on a CRT? Is that part of the experience for you?
Well, see, I have no problem with emulation, because I think if you're using emulation that's done well, whether it's through just a computer, you know, questionable legality, or like on a Switch or something, I think that they work really well. But I think if you're going to play the original console, you have to have a CRT because they don't communicate well with modern TVs. They just don't look right. Have you tried plugging an NES into an HDTV?
Oh, yeah. I've played hundreds of hours of NES and SNES games on my HDTV. I mean, that's why I'm asking, because it's more of a personal preference thing. Like, some dudes like the CRT and some dudes don't mind it. Like, I've played, like, Bionic Commando and Super Metroid and, like, these very input-intensive games, and I've never had a big issue with it.
It's less the input lag, because I'm not one of these dudes who can, like, do frame-perfect stuff, so it doesn't matter so much to me. It's more like the ghosting. You know, like, I tried to play Final Fantasy VI on a HDTV off my original SNES, and, like, just the ghosting and the fonts and stuff really bothered me. And it also just depends on how well your HDTV handles that kind of stuff, and mine probably wasn't handling it very well.
Like, I could plug any of my old consoles directly into my TV, because most of them have the composite out cords, but I don't have composite jacks on my capture card, so I can't, like, stream from it, which is too bad, because with the Fiesta Onis, I actually do have a repro cart of Final Fantasy V for SNES that I could play, but I can't stream from it. It's unfortunate. So was this going to be your first foray into the classic Mega Man games, or are these games that you're already familiar with?
I owned 2 and 3. They were like my two games, and I've played a little bit of all the classic Mega Man games, but I've never been great at any of the ones besides 2 and 3. So playing 1, 4, 5, and 6, like, kind of not on crappy emulation would be kind of a new thing for me.
I think for my money, because I'm with you, 2 and 3 are like the classics. Those are the ones I had. But I feel like if I didn't have those rose-tinted glasses, like, I think 5 would almost be my pick for favorite out of that particular, like, classic collection. So I actually have one of the notes I had for you, because, like, as you've observed, I do not have children. And
right, yes.
As a man who does not have children, I feel like I know better than you how to raise your child. Just, you're doing everything wrong. My friends who have children, they're doing everything wrong. Clearly, I know better how to raise everybody's kids. I think, like, every childless person feels that way to some extent.
Yes and no. Before I had kids, I knew very damn well that I, like, had not changed a diaper as an adult.
Right.
Possibly ever. I can't remember if I ever did it when I was, like, a tween or something. I'm pretty sure I've never had changed a diaper until I changed my infant son's diaper. So, like, I went into it knowing, like, I was deficient in some areas of child raising, for sure.
I've never changed a diaper, but it came real close once. I was babysitting for my cousin, his babies at the time. She was 4, and then the younger one was like 1.5 or something. I only had to be there for a couple hours. I was just going to sit on the computer and play on IRC or whatever until they got home from work. And they're like, but, you know, you're going to have to change the diaper if it comes to that. You're going to be able to figure it out. I'm like, yeah, I got it. And they're going to be home 4:30, whatever it was. 4 o'clock or 4:10, I started.
Oh no.
I'm smelling it. And I'm like, you know what? She could just chill for 20 minutes and then I won't have to touch it. So I dodged the bullet.
Oh no. But you smelled the poo poo?
I just pretended like I didn't realize that the baby needed changing when their mother got home.
I feel like 3-4 years ago, I would have heard the story and gone, ha 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 ha, you got away with it. But as a father now, I hear that story and I go, oh, that poor baby's butt. Because you probably don't realize this because you're an adult. You poop into a toilet. But poop is acidic. And when you sit in poop, you're basically sitting in, like, the rough equivalent of, like, lemon juice.
Should that be my penance? Should I have to empty lemon juice onto my chair and sit in it for 20 minutes?
Like, maybe, like, a composite of, like lemon juice and, like some sort of dough, just to get it real nice and pasty and up into all the crevices.
I'll tell you what. Any listeners that we did have are gone now.
Well, welcome to the disgusting parenting quarter.
With that, I feel like that sentence about lemon juice and dough and crevices, like, that might have been the worst sentence I've ever heard.
Good night, everybody. No, seriously, I mean, you've heard of diaper rash before, right? Like, that's what it is. Like,
yeah. But, I mean, I knew about it at the time. Like, well, I'm not ignorant to these things, but I was, like, balancing, like, I mean, this baby's not forming memories yet. Like, she's not going to remember that I'm the one that left her in a smelly diaper for 20 minutes.
True. And I will tell you this, too, now, when you have a new newborn, like a really little kid, there's definitely times when you sit there and your kid has just fallen asleep in your arm and you haven't slept more than an hour at a time in about a week and a half, and your baby falls asleep, and babies love to poop when they sleep when they're new, and you're just holding them and you're just like, sorry, champ, you're going to have to rest in that one for a minute because I'm not waking you up.
I bring it up because there is a quote from Adam Savage that I love from an old interview where he says that I think Legos are one of the best toys ever developed. And then I wasn't able to find the quote, but I'm pretty sure he follows up in the interview something like it's the only toy you should buy your child until they're old enough to specifically ask for something else. Like, that's how good.
Nope. Nope. Does Adam Savage not have children?
Well, I think he's talking from the standpoint of, like, because they're a creative toy. Like, I'm sure he's not saying, hey, buy, like, the Harry Potter 2,000-piece box for your two-year-old.
Well, yeah, because let me tell you something. My child does not have any Legos because they are huge choking hazards. Well, they're tiny.
No, you can get, like, the big, like, Duplo blocks and stuff, though.
He has Duplo blocks, but let me tell you what else babies don't have. Motor skills. He can't put Legos together. Like, he can barely stack, like, regular blocks at this point. I mean, he's not, like, unable to use his hands. I mean, he's 2.5 years old now, but he's not really Lego dexterous yet.
Well, here's my broader question is, like, because clearly Adam Savage feels like you can control, like, what kind of things your children are into. You want to try to nurture particular kinds of interests when they're very young. It's like, do you feel like that's something you have control over?
To a degree. I mean, the kids are going to get into what they get into. Like, I have many friends who, like my sister, for instance, one of her kids was like, just got really into Elmo. And they're like, we don't have a TV in the house. She just picked this up through cultural osmosis. Like, somebody had an Elmo at, like, the playground or something like that. Like, you can't control everything, but you do have some control. Like, for instance, we're parents who read to our kid all the time. Like, I mean, we read him like 3 or 4 books before bed, before nap, just in the middle of the day if he brings us one, you know. So he is a kid who very much likes books. Problem is, my wife is sleeping right now because she works at midnight, and I can't just, what I would do if I was home alone or if she wasn't trying to sleep right now is I would just let him go to the door and scream because he needs to learn. But right now I'm trying to get him to go back to bed. He's actually just sitting on the floor right now. So
if he makes it another like 2 hours and she's off to work, now you're in the house alone, then he can just let the screaming happen all night.
I mean, then I'm probably going to try to go to sleep.
I have friends, they have young kids, older than yours. I think they're 3 and 5 now. I think 5. Like, I think this will be her first year in kindergarten this year. But, like, I would show up for D&D, and I'll show up a little bit early, and so they're putting the kids to bed. So whatever the kids were watching on TV is still on the TV. And that's, like, my only connection to what very, very young children watch. And I cannot just believe how stupid this programming is. And I ask them the same question. I'm like, can't you steer them away from the bubble guppies?
Kids get more and more opinions as they get older. Like, you know, when he was real little, we didn't watch any TV. And then as we started introducing more and more stuff, we, like, kept it pretty much just on PBS Kids. And he still doesn't really watch anything that doesn't come on PBS Kids. But he's, like, obsessed right now with Daniel Tiger, which is, it's kind of a more touchy-feely kind of show. It's, like, talking about emotions and, you know, stuff like that. It's less like what I would like him to watch, which is counting and adding and words, you know. But he did go through a phase where he was really into this thing called Super Y, which is a reading show, and he, like, got really good with his alphabet and stuff from that. But eventually he's going to figure out how YouTube works, and then it's just all over because all the kids are on YouTube. I was at my parents' house for a party, and there was a 9-year-old girl just talking about, yeah, I woke up and watched this thing on YouTube. And then she was like, I saw this thing on YouTube, and I forget what it was, but I was like, I don't think that's true. And she was like, oh, I mean, it's on YouTube. I'm like, okay.
Well, it's on YouTube. It has to be true.
I mean, that's basically what I said. Like, and she said something like, well, I mean, they don't lie, but they like to play pranks. And I'm like, no, that's lying.
I got to be honest with you. I Googled Daniel Tiger, and I don't know that I'm on board with calling this character a tiger. This is a tennis ball with ears.
Most cartoon characters are kind of like that. I mean, look at the South Park kids. Like, they're basically three tennis balls stuck on each other. No, it's based on the it's a Mr. Rogers company thing. Daniel Tiger is the child of Daniel S. Tiger.
Right. Yeah.
It's so interesting though, because it's like, okay, so Daniel S. Tiger married a tiger and they had a little Daniel Tiger.
Okay.
But then you have the kitty cat, Henrietta Kitty Cat, has a daughter, no dad. And then you have X the Owl from Mr. Rogers, who has a nephew, O the Owl.
Well, no, back up. Let's go back to Henrietta for a second here. So we're talking about, like, immaculate conception. Because I remember this Henrietta cat, and she had this, like, very squeaky voice.
Yeah. Oh, they all have, like, vocal tics. Like, yeah, she says meow meow, and the other one says toots all the time, and it's a mess. but then you have this one who's X the Owl, or O the Owl, who lives with his Uncle X, and I'm like, well, where's this kid's parents? And he's like kind of OCD too. So in fact, earlier today, Michelle Googled, does O the Owl, and the autocomplete, it's not showing it to me now, does O the Owl, your autocomplete is, have autism, have Asperger's, have a mom, have parents.
I was just going to, that's exactly what comes up. Does O the Owl have autism?
Because he gets really bent out of shape when the other kids do something that's like kind of out of the norm.
Oh my goodness. I'm really glad that you and I got those same results, because Google, like, will personalize those kind of things. Like, I'm really glad you didn't say, yeah, the first thing that comes up, does O the Owl have parents? Because I'm looking at my screen and I'm thinking, what does this say about me? Apparently, I just keep Googling whether or not various fictional characters are autistic. I have no idea.
Yeah, that Google. They know more about you than you know about yourself sometimes. Okay.
I know that Daniel Tiger is in my search history now, so thanks for that.
Well, yeah, I mean, now you're on the FBI watch list. Because parentless young adults who search for Daniel Tiger, you gotta keep an eye on them. So the real trouble with raising kids is sometimes you just get into a feedback loop.
Okay.
Because, like, right now he thinks that getting up out of bed and having me come in there and put him back in the bed is funny. So I'm having to go in there and tell him, like, I'm not laughing. I'm not happy.
I'm going to be honest with you. A little bit funny.
Shh, don't encourage him.
How do you feel about discussing, like, a six-month-old meme?
Which one?
I'm going to send it to you onto the Discord. I don't know if you've seen this or not.
It depends on if it hit the Twitters or not, because I get most of my memes via Twitter.
I feel like it probably did hit the Twitter, but I just don't follow a wide enough group of people on Twitter to see most of the memes as they happen. So go ahead, just like run us through the options here, what we're looking at.
So the first one is what I believe is either an eagle or a hawk, definitely a very large bird of prey, times 50. So I assume I get 50 of these?
50 hawks.
Are they trained?
I mean, we'll get into the nitty gritty of the questions.
Okay, put a pin in that. All right, so we got 50 hawks, 10, what I'm going to say are alligators, maybe crocodiles.
I think for purposes of this meme, we can just, an alligator equals a crocodile.
We have 6 bears, large bears, 7 bulls.
No, wait a minute. Are you saying 6 bears because it's a picture of 2 bears and then it says times 3?
You know what's funny? I didn't, but I think that's what my brain did. I think my brain did that automatically. I think I just did a math without meaning to. 2 bears times 3 or bears times 3? I think because of the way that the pictures are set up, because they've got like 8 gerbils in one of these pictures, and I'm not going to do that math.
Right.
So let's say 3 bears.
Okay, 3 bears.
7 bulls. 1 hunter, 1 human with a gun, 15 wolves. Okay, so I'm kind of confused. Are those just rats?
Those are definitely rats, yes.
Okay, 10,000 rats, 5 gorillas, and we're talking silverbacks, these are the big boys, and 4 lions.
My initial thought is we don't have enough information to make this decision. Like, we don't, there's so many things we don't know. Like you say, are the birds trained? But we're supposed to pick 2, and then they're going to defend us from the other 7.
Right. So I'm looking at this picture, and I'm seeing a man with a gun But it appears to be just going from, because it's literally a silhouette. And I'm not a gun expert, but I'm going to say that is a single shot, single action rifle. That doesn't look like something with a lot of ammunition in it.
Like, for all we know, it could be a BB gun.
It could be a BB gun. It would have a similar silhouette. It definitely is not an AR-15. It does not appear to be a shotgun. I guess it could be a single barrel shotgun. But I'm going to call that like maybe a medium caliber single action rifle. You're not going to take down 7 charging bulls very easily with that thing.
No. In fact, even if it were a single barrel shotgun, I wouldn't want to put it up against 7 charging bulls. Like, even without the gun, like, even if this wasn't a hunter, if it's just a picture of a man, like, is there any scenario where he's not the first one you take?
Again, we're not having enough information. Are we saying he's defending us like it's an open field, or are we saying it's man, so I can use the power of man, I can build a no, fortress?
I think we can assume, like, you get a buddy, like, it's a guy, with all of the, like, average intelligence and physical capability of a man.
I mean, if nothing else, I can always maybe try to outrun him.
But it does raise an interesting question, is the scenario as posed doesn't make sense, because for all of these animals to be trying to come and kill you, and whichever two, like, they're already ignoring their programming. You already have 50 hawks that are not going to be acting like regular hawks.
But it says they will defend you. And here, let me ask you this. Have you ever read The Gunslinger by Stephen King?
I have not. No, I have not.
Okay, well, I recently read, well, I'm doing the audiobook because who has time to read? But I'm going through the series with audiobook, and one of the first things that he does in the series is, as a child, he passed a trial where you're supposed to pick a weapon, and he picks a trained hawk and just decimates a dude with him. And that's one trained hawk. I think if you've got 50 trained hawks, you can do some pretty serious damage.
You have to wonder if the person who put this meme together, are the numbers balanced at all? Because I'm thinking, yeah, 50 birds, that's a lot of birds. If we're already ignoring, these birds are going to be ignoring their nature. If they're well-trained, you could almost build like some kind of like a tarp or something with a series of ropes, and then you and your hunter buddy can hop into it, and your 50 hawks just carry you to safety.
Or they could just net you some lions.
But then if we're looking at it from that angle, is there any scenario where the 10,000 rats are useful? Is that ever going to be on the table?
I mean, maybe the long con, like, do they have the plague? Like, are we trying to do this in a day or a generation?
I'm trying to bring to mind, like, take one of the silverbacks. Do 10,000 rats beat one of these silverbacks?
Again, not in a one-on-one fight, but I think in the long term, rats are probably going to kill all of us. In a long enough timeline.
Are you saying you might take the hawk over the hunter, or in addition to the hunter?
I like our hunter-hawk combo, actually. I'm liking this a lot. But then I'm thinking about the movie Congo, which was terrible, but they had a gorilla that knew sign language. If I had 5 gorillas that obeyed me, that would be better than one dude.
I mean, I'm not into animal cruelty or anything. You know, I'm against bullfighting and cockfighting and everything, but I still think there's a part of me that would pay cash money to see that gorilla go head-to-head with any of these pictures.
Well, that used to be that was a thing on, like, Discovery or something, where they would do, like, CG, you know, interpretations of what happens if a lion fights an alligator, you know, stuff like that. And the death roll wins, like, almost every time. If it's against an alligator, the death roll pretty much wins.
I mean, just looking at the options here, I think it's fair to say that the lions are a trap. Like, you don't want these lions.
No, and the thing is lions are they're pretty lazy hunters. I mean, they run after a herd and get the slowest one. And the slowest one is there to get got by the lions. Like, that's their function in life.
I think just looking at the image, like, and we only get 4 of these lions. And, like, I'm sorry, Simba, but I'm thinking your 4 lions are going to lose to anything else here.
I think that whoever put this together was doing it by relative size, other than putting one man in the middle. They're kind of almost a scale, you know, 50 hawks, 1,000 rats, 5 gorillas, 4 lions. They're kind of just, who's the bigger one? That's about as big, far as it went.
I'm looking at it again. It might not even be a hunter in the middle. It might just be, like, one of those little green army men, and the camera is just really close to it. That would be a shame if you picked that. He just hands you that, points you to your gorillas. Good luck, buddy.
I mean, if they step on it wrong, it might hurt their foot pretty bad, but that's about it. And also, like, I mean, are these, if you train me a bear, that's a pretty hefty situation there.
You get three bears. And I don't know how fast bears are. I'm going to just ballpark figuring. I'm going to bank on a, like, I think this is a brown bear or this is a grizzly. I don't even know the difference. I'm betting a bear can outrun a lion. So we take the three bears.
Well,
they're trained.
Holy crap. According to this, a grizzly bear could run 27 miles per hour.
Yeah, so without even looking it up, like, that's better than a lion, right? Clearly.
Oh, hell no. A lion can run up to 50 miles per hour in short bursts.
Well, then you got to think, like, what's the stamina on them? Because if we're assuming we can train them, we can take the lions. I'm trying to look for a scenario where you would take the lions, okay? They're trained, so you and your hunter ride two of the lions and leave the other two behind to intercept the 50 birds and 1,000 rats and everything else.
So we've got, like, a lion witch in the wardrobe situation now, where we've got the Jesus lion that we're rolling in on against the Snow Queen.
I had no idea lions were that fast.
I honestly didn't either, but it does say short bursts. I mean, they're cats, so they gotta nap all day after doing that for a second.
Because like you said, the lions, I mean, they can bring down the weakest in the herd, but I don't know how they do against a full-grown... Like, first they've got to get through the grizzly we've left behind, okay? Then they've got to catch up to the two grizzlies that we're riding, me and my hunter buddy here. And then they've got to actually bring those two grizzlies down. And I don't know, I'm thinking this escape plan might be... Of course, then it's the question, where are we escaping to? Are we just in this infinite savanna? I don't know. There's not enough information.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those memes that goes around that, you know, you have like a knee-jerk reaction to, and then you have to like really, once you get into it. Like I said, I'm taking 10,000 rats with the plague. They're killing all these guys.
Assuming that the hunter, he's got like human tool use and strength and intelligence, like you and this hunter could build you guys a shelter, like up in a tree or something. Leave the rats below and then everything else dies of plague over the course of the next 2 months.
All right, cool. We got a plan. Me and the hunter and maybe the hawks just to pick off some things from a distance.
The only thing on this list that could bring down the hawk would be the hunter with his rifle. Like, he's the only threat to these birds until they go into attack.
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure. I mean, you're not gonna... The gorilla, I mean, can bat them down when they're coming at them, but you got 50 hawks coming after one gorilla? They go for the eyes, man.
Like, how many hawks would be left after that? I mean, there's five gorillas.
We get to use D&D swarm rules in that case.
So once we're down to 25 hawks, they lose, like, a bonus die off their damage, and...
Yeah, it becomes a lot harder to hit the gorilla once you lose half your swarm of hawks.
Can I tell you a secret D&D thing? And if I tell you, you cannot tell any of my players.
I won't.
I'm going to link you to... this monster. And remember, you're honor bound. You can't share this with my players. You're not allowed.
Okay.
So here's this monster. And I just want to read you what this monster's main attack does, okay?
Oh my god.
Every creature that occupies the same space as the swarm must succeed on a DC 13 constitution saving throw or become temporarily blinded as their eyes strain from their sockets.
Oh, that's nasty.
If a creature... that's already temporarily blinded is targeted again and fails the saving throw, that creature becomes permanently blind as its eyes are pulled from their sockets to join the swarm, causing 1d8 piercing damage.
Wait, just 1d8 for losing an eyeball?
One. Jeez, oh, no, please. No, both eyes. It's both eyes at once. If you
lose, it just pulls them both out.
Was that the eye-popping sound effect?
Yeah, that was my Foley work. I don't know how that came across on the mic, but it felt good on my end.
Oh, man. So, yeah, I've got this Kobold Press Tome of Beasts. It's a third-party D&D 5e monster manual, and they bring back the mean. They bring back the mean that's been missing from D&D since third edition.
So, because I know you're not a totally evil DM, I assume you have some sort of side quest in your pocket for restoring their vision through some sort of pact with a devil or something?
No, I'm just putting three of these in a dungeon and I'm going to see what happens. I don't have a side quest planned.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. Maybe you don't like to go to the same trick more than once, but you have had, like, your players in a past campaign dink around with beholder eyes, so it wouldn't be unheard of.
I have another monster for you here.
Okay.
Because I have a Saturday D&D group, and they have helped me to determine which of the monsters out of this Cobalt Press Tome of Beasts have the meanest attacks?
Permanently blinding your dudes with a constitution save, which my guy would have always struggled to pass because I was not a con build at all. You would have blinded the hell out of Zook with that.
It's a melee weapon attack. It's a swarm of insects that can do this. Plus 6 to hit, reach 5 feet, 1 target. On a hit, it deals 1 piercing damage. And the suture fly sews the target's mouth, nose, or eye closed.
Ooh.
With supernatural speed, the suture fly repeatedly pierces the target's face, each time threading a loop of the target's own skin through the previous hole. These skin loops rapidly blacken, shrink, and draw the orifice tightly closed. It takes 2 actions and a sharp blade to sever the loops and reopen the orifice, and the process causes intense pain and 2 slashing damage.
So it doesn't do a whole lot of damage to you, it just makes you cut yourself back open.
Oh, there's another line here.
Oh god.
A victim whose mouth and nose have been sewn shut begins suffocating at the start of his or her next turn.
Yep. You know, if that line hadn't been there, I knew it was there anyhow, because logically, you're going to get something sewed up and you're not going to be able to breathe.
So I've dubbed these two. These are like the nightmare fuel monsters.
Yeah, they're, I'm going to be having nightmares about them tonight. And I don't even play your game anymore, thank God.
Thank goodness. I do have one of my players who doesn't do well with, like, horror stuff, with, like, nightmare fuel stuff. And I'm really hoping just when I describe this monster's attack, I just get, like, a nope, nope, nope it out. And that's the goal. I've already thrown some of the monsters out of this book at my group, and they already hate this book, so I know I'm using it properly. You know my favorite superhero is Florida Man. And I do love Florida Man. And this is the best Florida Man that I've seen in a little while. I'll link you the news story here.
Man arrested at playground. Oh, I saw this one. Man arrested at playground yells where babies come from.
So this man who, looking at his picture, you can tell he's bad news. Like, this is the quintessential Florida Man.
Let me just say that, I've seen a lot of mugshots in my day, and I often ask myself, at what point in your life do you wake up and think, you know, I think today is the day I get a face tattoo?
That's kind of what I mean. Is there any clearer example of something you can do to completely check out of polite society than tattoo your entire face? It's not, well, let's be clear, it's not like he got a little teardrop or like a little butterfly. His entire face is covered in like these tribal
tattoos. And I have
tattoos.
To wonder, was this one thing, did he do like the onk on his cheek first and then it just kind of grew from there? Or did he just go whole hog and said, no, I want the face mask?
So what this man has done is he's gone to a playground and climbed up onto the equipment and started shouting, where babies come from.
I'm sad I have not seen an unredacted news story. I've only seen, like, respectable news agencies report this. I kind of want to know what he shouted. Like, how bad was it?
I would buy the DVD if there was a video.
The officer said Ryan used inappropriate language. I would guess so.
Well, no, he didn't climb up onto the jungle gym and says, okay, now, children, you see, when a mommy bunny and a daddy bunny love each other very much. Like, no, that's not what...
That is not what face tattoo Florida Man does.
So, he's charged with disorderly conduct and fined $118. And I guess that was it.
What are you going to do?
I mean, these parents had to go home that night and clarify a few things, I believe.
Oh my god, I can't even imagine. I can't make the jokes that are going through my head on a PG show. But
is that like a nightmare situation for parents, though? Or is that something you could laugh at if it happened to you?
It depends on if I felt threatened or not. Like, if it was something where someone was just screaming and I was just like, okay, let's go away now, like, I would hopefully just be able to laugh about it. If it was something where, like, the guy was, like, also brandishing a knife, and you know, I would be like, okay, that's terrifying. You know, but yeah, I mean, I don't have exactly the best language around the house, and I haven't had my kid repeat anything really bad yet, but he has said a few things. Like, he has, not to completely give away my political leanings, but when the television is on the news, he says, no Trump. Like, that's how he tells us, I want to watch cartoons now, no Trump.
Oh, so he's not talking, like, to Trump on the TV saying no. He's telling you, no, I don't like this cartoon.
Well, he's basically saying, no, he's saying, like, no Trump. And I think he also has more than once said Trump is dumb. you know, so no, he's definitely expressing an opinion about Trump that he may or may not have heard or reflected in the household.
So what if he's a little older? Like, say he's like 9 or 10 and he comes home from school having stopped at the playground and he's like, hey, I met a man at the playground today. And this is what he said.
So if something like that happens when I'm not there, that's when I have to hope the police find him before I do, because I'm going on the hunt.
You're going on the hunt with your 50 hawks and your 3 grizzly bears.
Exactly. Me and my trained silverback gorillas are going. I'm talking tough. I'm not a fighter. What am I saying?
It does change the question of the meme a little bit if the man you get is Florida man.
Am I utilizing his crazy for good, or am I worried he's going to just start screaming where babies come from at the animals?
For anybody listening who doesn't know, I live in Florida, and that's why Florida Man is my favorite. I'm a big, big fan.
I may have called you Florida Man a time or two in my life.
I don't know if it's a thing anymore, but back in the day, you used to just be able to walk into the convenience store and just buy the little, like, cheaply printed booklet. Oh, here's everybody in a, like, 20-block radius who got arrested this week, and why?
Mugshot books, I think, are still a thing, because they're actually kind of blackmail material, because you can usually pay to have your mug not run in them. But I don't know if that business model has been ruled illegal yet or not.
I feel like I don't want to mischaracterize Florida Man here. But looking at his mugshot, I don't think he's the type who would care. If you told him, hey, pay us $500 and we won't put your story in our book, I think he'd be like, I was providing a public service. Help me signal boost my Jungle Gym shenanigans.
He could make an argument that sexual education is severely lacking in public schools these days, and he was just trying to plug the gap there.
Florida Man's here to help.
I found something called Busted Paper and Other Mugshot Magazines, why they are and will likely remain legal. So that's from 2013. So I guess they're still there.
Just in Florida or nationwide?
This is a Twin Cities Daily Planet article. So I guess they're legal at least in Minnesota.
Okay. Well, Minnesota, you don't ever see stories on Minnesota, man. It's too bad.
Yeah.
I would Google Minnesota Man, but I'd be worried that Google was wondering if I was asking if he's autistic.
So how do you spell Minnesota? Minnesota Man, Edgment and Budget, Manual Dexterity Test, Manufacturing. Yeah, Minnesota Man doesn't give you nearly as interesting a thing.
How are those kids going to learn then, McLean, I ask you?
If you put the space in there, you get your typical Minnesota man shot in car, missing, kills wife, kills grandparents, killed by police, from the future. Wait, hold on.
Well, that's why we haven't heard of him yet. It's not time.
Minnesota man says he's from the future and then proves it. He proved it. Wow. Okay. I'm going to bookmark this to read later. We might be talking about this one next week or next month or whenever, however often we decide to do this show that we do.
Yeah, you know, it's McLean. This is that podcast we did.